It's nearly 12 o'clock, and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it's your public radio station. We're broadcasting from up here on Signal Hill in Kodiak, where it's 32 degrees and sort of rain snowing. We're looking for snow before 3, then rain and snow after that. High near 37 today with north winds increasing to 20, could gust as high as 30 this afternoon. Rain is forecast for tonight. It could be heavy at times. Low around 34 overnight with northeast winds to 25, gusting to 35 tonight. And we're looking for rain and snow on Thursday as well. Coming up on the Midday Report, the Kodiak Borough Assembly has voted in favor of a resolution pushing back against changes to the current oil spill rules. Governor Dunleavy has given his fourth State of the State address. And in Dillingham, a plane was blown around on the runway on the ice.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. U.S. Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer is retiring. He's expected to issue a formal announcement on that tomorrow. NPR's Nina Totenberg reports on the 83-year-old's impact on historic rulings during the last 25-plus years on the country's highest court.
Breyer, professorial, practical, and moderately liberal, wrote many of the court's less glamorous but legally most important decisions and sought behind the scenes to build consensus for centrist decisions on a court that over his tenure has grown more and more conservative. Nonetheless, through his ability to forge compromise, he was able to eke out victories in a variety of areas, from affirmative action in higher education to upholding Obamacare. In both of these, he was not the author of the eventual opinion, but his hidden hand was said to be behind the compromise rulings. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.
A source familiar with the thinking of Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer tells NPR's Kelsey Snell that he would like to move a replacement for retiring Justice Stephen Breyer through the confirmation process along a similar timetable as Republicans moved Justice Amy Coney Barrett in 2020, which was just over a month following the death of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. The U.S. has given an answer to Russia's demands for ending their standoff over Ukraine, but Secretary of State Antony Blinken is not publicly sharing the response because he says the U.S. wants to encourage candid discussions with Russia. So for the time being, the threat of a Russian invasion against Ukraine looms, and the U.S. is sending Ukraine reinforcements.
More deliveries are expected in the days to come. We provided more defensive security assistance to Ukraine in the past year than in any previous year.
Russia annexed Crimea in 2014, but it says it has no intention of launching another offensive against Ukraine. The Federal Reserve is leaving interest rates unchanged near zero for now. But as NPR's Scott Horsley reports, the central bank is preparing to start raising rates soon in response to the stubbornly high inflation in this country.
In a statement released at the conclusion of their two-day meeting, Fed policymakers said they expect it will soon be appropriate to increase interest rates, which have been at rock-bottom levels since the start of the pandemic. The Fed pointed to a strong labor market and inflation that's been running more than three times its target range of 2%. Many forecasters predict the Fed will start raising interest rates at its next scheduled meeting in March, which is months earlier than had been expected just a few months ago. The central bank also reaffirmed its plan to phase out its bond buying program around that time. Mortgage rates have already begun climbing in anticipation of the central bank's moves. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
The Dow closes down 129 points, ending at 34,168. The S&P closes down 6 points at 4,349, and the NASDAQ was up 2 points at 13,542. It's NPR.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
The Kodiak Island Borough Assembly voted unanimously last week in favor of a resolution pushing back against proposed changes to current oil spill safety rules. The borough's adopted resolution will now go to the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation as public comment on the tentative changes, which were first proposed by the agency in 2019. Critics say the ADEC's amendments would loosen existing regulations aimed at environmental protection and disenfranchise citizen advisory committees and public input. The agency says the changes would bring current laws up to date with modern industry standards and clarify existing regulations.
These regulatory changes are something that coastal communities should be very acutely aware of, and we very much would appreciate your support.
That's Shailen Cochran speaking at last week's meeting. He's the director of public outreach with the Cook Inlet Regional Citizens Advisory Council, which was formed in response to the 1989 Exxon Valdez oil spill. The group says the proposed rule changes from the ADEC have improved since they were first drafted, but there are still issues. The group has presented its recommendations to several coastal boroughs. ADEC's public comment period for the proposal closes on January 31st. There's been another confirmed COVID-related death on Kodiak Island. KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth reports that the death was not due to the recent local surge in cases and occurred off the island last month.
Kodiak's 10th death from the pandemic was a resident from Old Harbor who succumbed to the virus on December 8th. The resident passed away in Anchorage. The state's official COVID-19 dashboard accounted for the fatality because it happened off-island. But Kodiak's data from the EOC, which accounts for on-island cases and deaths, did not. The EOC will be updating its data with the amended figure for total COVID-19-related deaths this week. Kodiak saw record rates of COVID-19 recently, largely linked to holiday travel and the presence of the Omicron variant. But cases have been declining in the last week. The EOC's latest figures show 388 active cases on the island and 2 current hospitalizations. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobroth.
In his 4th State of the State address on Tuesday evening, Governor Mike Dunleavy called on the legislature to pass bills to resolve permanent fund dividends, increase Alaskans' food security, and sell state land. And he urged lawmakers to prove people wrong who say nothing will get done in an election year.
Most Alaskans outside this room don't plan their lives around an election season. They plan their lives around hunting or fishing, construction season or tourism season, but not an election season. Alaskans won't accept that we can't get anything done because it's an election year.
It was the first in-person address Dunleavy gave to a joint session since before the pandemic led to changes in safety rules in the Capitol. At nearly an hour, it was his longest State of the State. Dunleavy said he envisioned a state where educational outcomes improve and people feel safer. He also described different state efforts to increase the number of healthcare workers in the state, including plans to train more certified nursing assistants and registered nurses, as well as his proposal to increase the number of state-supported medical students from 20 to 30.
Together with these partners, we'll build a stronger, more durable healthcare system in Alaska that can respond to almost any situation.
Dunleavy said the state is at the mercy of others for its food, and he wants to increase the state's food security. That includes plans to start a food security task force and to sell state land for agriculture. He contrasted the state with Texas, where 95% of the land is privately owned.
But here in Alaska, the biggest state in the country by far, we have barely 4% of our land in private hands. This has got to change.
Senate President Peter Michicki, a Soldotna Republican, praised the speech, including what the governor described as his vision for the state.
The test is going to be, how serious is that vision, and is the administration going to put the work in on being here in this building for the next 90 days, guiding us through and working with us?
Some of the legislation that Dunleavy described has already been introduced, but he said he would issue an executive order and introduce a bill to start the Food Security Task Force. Dunleavy recognized two young Alaskans who had big years, Olympic gold medalist Lydia Jacoby, who wasn't in the Capitol, and Miss America Emma Broyles, who was. But the biggest applause of the night was for another guest of the governor, Carly Rose Kelly. Dunleavy described how she survived domestic violence, drug addiction, and homelessness to become a peer support specialist for at-risk youth. Anchorage Democratic Republican Ivy Sponholz wrote in a social media post after the address that more Alaskans would experience recovery if Dunleavy hadn't vetoed $10 million for treatment centers in 2019. A spokesperson for the governor said at the time that the money wasn't attached to specific projects. On Sunday, a gust of wind unexpectedly hit an Alaska Airlines jet on a Dillingham runway as it was preparing to taxi from the terminal, causing it to slide on the icy tarmac. That's according to an emailed statement from the airline on Monday. The jet was carrying 74 passengers and four crew members. The airline said no one was injured and no equipment was damaged. Gordon Isaacs was one of the passengers on the plane. He and his wife were headed to a family wedding. They had been trying to fly out for days. On Sunday, they were hopeful because the jet from Anchorage made it to Dillingham that afternoon. The rain started to pick up as they checked in and boarded the plane.
As soon as it started moving, I believe, it started also sliding. And the wind turned it around about 45 degrees, I think, so the jet blast was pointed right at the terminal.
He says it wasn't obvious that they were sliding from inside the plane.
But once I saw how the airplane turned around, the wind was coming straight across the runway. I'm a pilot, so I know that the wind will tend to weather vane the plane, so the nose is pointed toward the wind. And that's what happened. It pushed us around to where we were pointed straight toward the runway.
Isaacs said the ground crew came out to spread sand around the plane. The airline canceled the flight because of the worsening weather. It then took passengers off the plane, five at a time.
They brought a lift truck and unloaded us off the back door of the airplane into this lift truck, five people at a time, and let us down on the ground. And they had a nice trail sanded to walk in, but it was so windy, even on the sanded trail, it was hard to stand up.
Rona Halford was on the plane with her mother.
It was just really icy. The apron was icy. The walkway was. And I thought they handled it professionally, and the ground crew worked really hard to get everybody off carefully. I thought it was handled well.
The airline rebooked the passengers on the Monday flight, which did make it out. One passenger brought smoked fish to the pilots on behalf of the community as thanks for how they managed the situation. 8 decades after the fact, the federal government plans to clean up a contaminated former Army site on an island near Sitka. Fort Babcock was designed to be the keystone in the defense of Sitka Harbor, which in the 1930s hosted a significant military presence to counter a rising military threat from Imperial Japan. But as Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports, its legacy today is little more than abandoned buildings and contaminated soil near the shores of Sitka Sound.
Few people in Sitka know as much about the area's military history as high school teacher Matt Hunter.
I kind of have a passion for local history and really got into World War II stuff back in middle school.
He says in the 1930s, after Imperial Japan invaded its neighbors, the United States realized it had few Pacific defenses outside of Hawaii and the Panama Canal Zone.
But Alaska, sort of the third vertex of a strategic triangle, was completely undefended.
Military planners went to work to change that. Naval air stations in Kodiak, Dutch Harbor, and Sitka were rapidly developed. Defense of those naval bases fell to the Army, which installed a battery of guns capable of striking an enemy ship from 12 miles away. But as the tide of the war shifted, the threat from Imperial Japan receded, and by 1944, the military canceled the defense project.
And they just polished up the work that was right next to town. And then as soon as they finished, they abandoned them and locked the doors and left.
Today, the site is heavily overgrown. But among the ruins, there's still evidence of the incredible effort by thousands of men.
There's even some notes on some of the workbenches in there written by the men who were in the construction battalion.
One member of that battalion came back for a visit more than a decade ago.
That's just like MacArthur wading ashore. Of course, I said I shall return. I didn't like that guy, though.
93-year-old Bob Vollmer returned with his family to Kruzhov Island in the summer of 2010.
This is a neat place. Spooky.
KCAW's Ed Ronco shadowed him and filed a story about the Indiana man who'd spent most of 1943 helping build Fort Babcock.
I've been dreaming about this for years and years and years. I really didn't think I'd ever get back here.
Vollmer passed away earlier this month at the age of 104. But in the interview he gave to KCAW more than 11 years ago, he expressed surprise by how much nature had taken over what had been a bustling observation post during the war.
And I'm real happy to know, like places like this, they're still environmentally sound.
But Fort Babcock is not as pristine as it may have appeared to Vollmer in 2010. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, which is tasked with cleaning up former military sites, discovered serious contamination about 2 or 3 years later. Beth Astley is the Army Corps' project manager, overseeing cleanup of the site. She says investigators knew about the old oil tanks, but in 2012 and 2013, they dug deeper.
That's when we discovered there was PCB contamination at the former power plant.
In a document filed last summer, the Army Corps announced plans to remove about 559 cubic yards of PCB-contaminated soil and place them in what Astley calls super sacks,
which are large sacks that are specially made to hold contaminated soil. And then those bags would then be put onto a barge, and then they would be taken to a port and then to the landfill.
In the lower 48, there aren't any places in Alaska that accept PCBs, which are carcinogenic and will bioaccumulate in the body. Sitka Tribe of Alaska has been pushing for the cleanup of Shoals Point. People hunt, fish, and gather traditional foods on Kruzhov Island, just a skiff ride across the sound from Sitka.
The tribe is pleased that the Army Corps is going forward with cleaning up the site because it's long overdue.
That's Helen Dangle. She works in natural resources for the tribal government. She says the Army Corps' plan is to address the most hazardous waste at the former Fort Babcock site.
But that doesn't mean that all of the contaminants will be cleaned up. In the document, there's a lot of talk about cleanup levels and if there's a complete pathway to humans through air, through drinking water, through skin contact, or through eating. And so if they determine that there's not a complete pathway, then some of the contaminants aren't getting cleaned up.
The Army Corps says it plans to remediate the area to residential standards, and no additional environmental monitoring would be required. The cleanup isn't going to happen overnight. The Army Corps is still designing the $2.2 million effort. Actual work and removal of the PCB-contaminated soils isn't expected until 2024. 80 years after the U.S. military had walked away. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
A slate of regulation changes for gravel pits is back on the table at the Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly, reigniting a debate about the borough's most contentious planning issue. As KDLL's Sabine Pooks reports, landowners on both sides are raising many of the same concerns as when those regulations were first proposed in 2019.
Gravel pits are open mines where gravel is extracted, and the Kenai Peninsula has many, especially in the borough's unzoned, unincorporated areas. Most applications for gravel pit permits go through the borough's planning commission, and they're consistently controversial, bringing out heated testimony from owners who spend years and money on their pit plans, and residents who worry about how those pits in turn will impact their neighborhoods. That's why the borough convened the Material Sites Working Group in 2018 to take another look at existing regulations. It met for over a year and crafted a list of recommended code changes that it hoped would reduce conflict between neighbors, like stricter regulations about audio and visual barriers. But neither side was happy with the recommendations at the time. Gravel pit owners thought those changes were too strict, and their neighbors thought they didn't go quite far enough. So the borough assembly decided against enacting any changes at all. Robert Ruffner was on the Planning Commission at the time.
Rather than the assembly kind of taking that and going through and looking at the whole suite of changes, they just voted it all down without much discussion. And so that was pretty disappointing.
Borough Mayor Charlie Pierce brought those same recommendations up for the assembly's consideration at the last meeting. Emmett Trimble is one of the stakeholders who testified. He lives in Anchor Point and applied for a gravel permit 4 years ago so he could mine gravel for his business. He says Anchor Point relies on jobs and development from gravel pits like the one he's proposing. But his neighbors say a pit would mar their ocean view and be a source of noise in the neighborhood. The Borough's Planning Commission agreed and in 2018 denied Trimble's permit, a break from its usual record of approval. A lengthy back and forth ensued, and the issue went to the courts. Ultimately, a Kenai Superior Court judge ruled that the commission can, in fact, deny gravel pit permit applications. At last week's assembly meeting, Trimble said he takes issue with the proposed regulation changes, and he says decisions about negative sound and visual impacts from pits are subjective.
No one's going to be entirely happy, but when you have both sides unhappy, that's not the time to run forward with it.
Critics of gravel pits say they're unhappy with the rule changes as well. Ken Killian of Sterling thinks open pits are disruptive, and he wants more measurable standards in place so that the Planning Commission isn't making arbitrary decisions about which pits are okay and which pits are not.
We are asking our elected officials in this room to go back to the drawing board, make a radical change in where these pits can be located, create true standards, not squishy conditions that have allowed business interests to move in our neighborhoods and make them an undesirable place to live.
Ruffner's still on the Planning Commission today. He said disapproval from both sides of the issue is what stymied the assembly from taking any action the last time around.
This time, you know, I'm hopeful that at least the issue will come up and it's clear, you know, whatever comes out is more clear to the Planning Commission so that we really understand, you know, what rules we're supposed to be applying from the assembly.
It's likely to be a while before the assembly makes a final decision. At their last meeting, members parsed over several amendments to the ordinance but didn't take any action on the original motion. They said they'd solicit more feedback first from industry groups and concerned citizens. Meanwhile, the Planning Commission is holding a hearing on the Anchor Point pit permit this week. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
Today's KMXT local news is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
Insight Daily Radio.
From food to fashion, science to tech talk, or for just plain fun, we've got you covered. From the art of all things, here's Lasana Jeffries.
The creative process is mysterious, and inspiration sometimes comes in unexpected things. In 1991's Terminator 2 Judgment Day came to director James Cameron while he was eating a hot fudge sundae. He told his effects team that the robot had to look like a spoon going into hot fudge. Only her hairdresser knows for sure. Clairol's most famous ad campaign in 1956, top 10 taglines of the 20th century, came from advertising legend Shirley Polykoff when she returned from her own hairdresser with blonde hair to a disapproving mother-in-law. The number of American women who colored their hair rose from 7% to 50%. The Oakland Raiders logo wasn't based on a pirate. It was modeled after Hollywood Western star Randolph Scott, who appeared in more than 100 movies in the 1950s. Octopus's Garden. On a boat trip in Sardinia in 1968, Ringo Starr turned down the octopus he was served for lunch. That sparked a conversation about octopuses. According to the Beatles drummer, the captain told me how they go round the seabed and pick up stones and shiny objects to build gardens. I thought, how fabulous! The Nightmare Before Christmas. Tim Burton was walking by a storefront one day as workers were removing the Halloween display and setting up for Christmas. Seeing the ghouls and goblins next to Santa got Burton thinking, what would happen if these two worlds collided? So next time you get a crazy idea, take heart. You're in very good company. And thanks for listening. I'm Lisanna Jeffries.
Insight Daily Radio.
A housing needs assessment survey is coming soon to Kodiak. Help your community by participating in the survey, which may come by mail or via a phone call. Responses are anonymous and will be incorporated into a housing needs assessment document that will be available to the public. Those who complete the survey will be entered into a prize drawing happening each week in February. This message is sponsored by the Kodiak Island Housing Authority.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Wednesday. It is the 26th day of January, the year 2022. The sun rose today at 9:23. It will set again at 5:21. That will give us 7 hours and 58 minutes of glorious daylight. That's a gain of 4 minutes and 8 seconds compared to yesterday. A record low for this date was -2, set in 1973, and our record high was 46 degrees. That was set in 1929. Presently 36 out at the airport, on our way to a high of 37. Look for rain and snow for the rest of the day, and rain tonight. The rain could be heavy at times tonight, the low around 34, northeast winds gusting as high as 35 this evening. For tomorrow, more rain, mostly before 3 p.m., then snow after that. High near 38 tomorrow, north winds to 20, gusting to 25. Looking at our local tides, we have a low tide coming up here on the east side at 2:46 this afternoon. That will be a 1.3-foot tide. Our next high tide will be at 9:01 p.m. That will be a 5.3-foot tide. Our low tide for the middle of the night will be at 2:01 a.m. and be 3.1 feet. And our morning high tide here on the east side will be at 8:44 a.m. and be 8.9 feet. Over on the west side, you have a low tide coming up at 3:16 p.m. That will be a 1.8-foot tide in Larson Bay. Your next high tide will be at 9:21 p.m. and be 9.6 feet. Your low tide for the middle of the night will be at 2:53 a.m. and be 4.9 feet. And your morning high tide on the west side will be at 9:16 a.m. and be 13.7 feet in Larson Bay. Mariners, here's your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side. Gale warning through tonight. Northeast 35 today and seas to 11 feet. For tonight, northeast 40, seas to 13 feet. And for tomorrow, east winds to 25 knots and seas to 12 feet. In the Shelikof Strait, gale warning through Thursday. Northeast 30, increasing to 40 knots in the afternoon on our west side, seas to 12 feet. For tonight, northeast 45, seas to 16 feet. And for tomorrow in the Shelikof, northeast 45, seas to 16 feet. The Kodiak City Council will be having a regular council meeting tomorrow. That meeting begins at 7:30 p.m. and will be held virtually. Public members are encouraged to tune in right here at KMXT on 100.1 FM. The meeting will also be web-streamed, and the web-streaming link and meeting packets are both available online at the City of Kodiak website. For more information, contact the city clerk at 486-8636. The library is closed this week due to staff shortages and the ongoing community spread of COVID, but curbside service is still available for books, IRS forms, and copy jobs. Please reserve materials through their online catalog. You can find that at the City of Kodiak Library website. Please call 486-8686 for service Monday through Saturday, and that's 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Also, a winter story stroll is available to read around the perimeter of the library through February. Two picture books are posted to read, and a special craft has been created to complement the stories. Give them a call when you're done with your stroll, and you can pick up a craft kit geared for ages 3 to 6. The Solid Waste Advisory Board has a regular meeting tonight. That's happening at 5:15 p.m. and will be conducted virtually. In addition, the assembly will be having a work session. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. will also be virtual. To tune in to virtual meetings, go to the city or the borough website. That's at www.kodiakak.us. And the Coast Guard Marine Safety Detachment in Kodiak would like to remind mariners to check the date on your commercial fishing vessel safety decal in the window. If it is expiring soon or has expired, stop by their office downtown and pick up a checklist to prepare for your dockside exam. A safety exam is required for all commercial fishing vessels that operate more than 3 miles from shore, including transiting to the fishing area. Give them a call at 486-5918 or stop by their office in the subway building downtown if you have any questions.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.